Life's evolution has always formed and influenced the makeup of the Earth's atmosphere with various tipping points along the way. Why wouldn't man's population passing 9.5 billion again be a tipping point? Planting trees costs a lot of money, and if many, most die, is arguably a waste of money. Is it better to reduce the amount of trees we are cutting down and the drivers behind that cutting?
This is the People's Countryside Environmental Debate Podcast. We don't talk about the countryside as much as we used to. You guys send in questions and we try and cover them. Always try and bring it back to an environmental angle. We hope to stretch your thinking and maybe explore opinions, different opinions to yourselves, and realise opinions are not facts. They're just momentary passes of consciousness. I'm Stuart the Wild Man Mabbott, one of the co-hosts. He is.
I'm William Manklow. Thanks very much for being with us. We're well into the new year now, aren't we, Stuart? This podcast, as you say, Stuart, is we don't always talk about the environment, but it does cover six main themes, doesn't it? And can I see if I can get these six main themes? So I think I remember them now, because you know, I struggled for ages and ages and ages. So it is the human condition, it is social justice, it is nature, philosophy, climate, and sustainability.
Yeah, you had all that written down, I reckon.
No, it's all in my head. Right. I've taken lead from Susie Darrington, because she whipped it out. That sounds wrong. Mm. She it came off the top of her head. She got them in one go, and I felt ashamed that I did not know them myself. Yes, this is the People's Countryside Environmental Debate Podcast.
And we like to deal with certainties, but life is full of insecurities about our lack of knowledge. And William and I always try and to not try and cover up our lack of knowledge. We just try and explore the grey areas of our own understanding, and hopefully it relates to your understanding of the world as well. Don't you agree?
You can have certainties in life. You do know things. Everybody knows, has a certain amount of knowledge, but that knowledge ends at some point. And sometimes it's best when you feel that you don't know what you don't have a bit of knowledge. Just listen to somebody who is knowledgeable about it and see what they have to say about it.
We try and have the conversations that need having. Very often they are conversations, not a debate. But we try and show localised actions to try and improve the quality of life wherever you're listening in the world to this podcast. And through actions, we try and address what some of the questions and the challenges you set us to discuss. So we try and come up with actions, not every time, but we're just like you. We're just trying to find the way in the world. We're not experts.
We've gone from having two releases a week, which was Sunday and Tuesday, just to Sunday, but we are covering the same amount of questions in a week that is being covered in one episode. And the reason why we're doing that is to freshen up the podcast format for ourselves and also for you as well. It keeps the podcast fresh, Stuart, I think, doesn't it?
It does. And keep sending your questions in for us to discuss. We've now got 18 lined up. So they're reducing. We were up to about 70-odd at one time, but we're down to about 18. So if you get your question in now, we'll cover it sooner than we would have done at one point. How can they email us the question, William?
thepeoplescountryside@gmail.com. We also have a new tier benefit for our Game Changer backers as well, which will give you an opportunity to get your question to the front of the queue as well.
What's a Game Changer backer?
Game Changer backer is through Patreon, a way of backing this podcast financially. It is free for you to listen to, but it's not free for us to make. We put quite a bit of time into this podcast, editing and that type of thing. Oh, worries us, right, Stuart?
But there's a change to the format in our Patreon releases come February 2024. What's that?
Again, refreshing what we do. Normally we'd do every Monday, at least every Monday, there would be a new bit of fresh material. Some of it's public, some of it's behind the paywall. Well, we're going to do it every fortnight, but it's still going to be two posts.
Yeah, 10 o'clock and 5 o'clock.
10 o'clock and 5 o'clock.
UK yes. time. Hammer time. Right, we got two questions today to cover. One from Elaine in Telford, Shropshire, England.
It's a good place for Speedway, isn't it?
Well, Ice Speedway at one time back in the 90s. Yes. In February. It was normally
on. Are you impressed by my memory?
Yeah, well, sort of. Yeah, but what day was it on of the year?
I have no idea.
It was always on Valentine's Day.
Oh, how romantic.
Yeah. Anyway, so Roman in Slovakia, he's got a question for us as well. So we'll do Elaine's and then we'll do Roman's. Do you want to read Elaine's question out first, William?
Yes, welcome back both Elaine and Roman. Thank you very much for your questions. Both Roman and Elaine have sent in questions before.
Many times.
Elaine from Telford in Shropshire. Elaine says, right from the start, Life's evolution has always formed and influenced the makeup of the Earth's atmosphere with various tipping points along the way. Why wouldn't man's population passing 9.5 billion again be a tipping point? When will we all admit that human existence will have positive and negative effects on the planet? Will there ever be a time when we're not motivated to change just because it has a personal benefit on us or our pockets?
Loads in there.
There is definitely the overall feeling of this question for me. I agree with it. So it's this whole idea of, you know, we are part of nature. I think we often try and see ourselves as not part of nature. And that, isn't this just part of the natural process? The natural evolution? And who's to say this hasn't happened before in the past? From species that we're not even aware of?
Yeah.
Or other parts of the universe? This happens all the time, maybe? Who knows?
I was watching, I think it was the David Attenborough programme a while back, autumn time, I think it was, and he was talking about the evolution of the Earth's atmosphere, oxygen. Now, many people argue that life, the instigator of life, came from another planet. It was like a meteorite. It brought some chemical here that activated life.
Yes.
But wherever it came from, the first things were amoeba and plankton. And that they started, when they started to evolve, that they would put out, would produce oxygen in the sea. And when the sea got the capacity, it couldn't hold any more oxygen in it, it would, little air bubbles would disappear in that form, the atmosphere, the oxygen in the atmosphere. And that takes billions of years. And so what you're saying there, right from the start, life's evolution has always formed and influenced the makeup of the Earth's atmosphere with various tipping points along the way. Well, I think what you're talking about there is, the oxygen in the water, it then went in, formed the atmosphere that is then breathable. So, yeah, life has a consequence. So why wouldn't life have a consequence now? Which is, it brings you back to, is global warming man-made or not? Well, how can man not have an impact, positive and negative? This is what she says.
Yeah, because it's all part of the natural cycle. Yeah. Are we not just part of the natural cycle?
Yeah.
I think this can verge on denying climate change a little bit if we're not careful, because both of us, I feel, believe firmly in man's position and man's influence on climate change.
Yeah.
But isn't that also part of that natural cycle? I think the issue we have is that we're conscious of it, maybe a species previously wasn't conscious of their impact on the environment.
These amoeba were just getting on doing their thing. Were they conscious?
Yes. Yeah. Or any animal, of course.
In man approaching 9.5 billion in population, could that again be a tipping point? Well, why wouldn't it be? And why aren't there tipping points that we have even noticed before? Tipping points happen all the time.
Yeah, there's also a thing called the great filter, by the way. There's certain sort of like steps that filters that we've already gone past to actually get to this level of to get to this stage of our evolution. We've passed these filters, and is there a great filter ahead of us that will stop us? And one of them could be that it's population. You have to remember, really, that population has really seriously gone up in the last 200 years. It's really been that, and that's gone hand in hand with scientific advancement. We think about the COVID pandemic and then the horrific loss of life in the COVID pandemic. When you think about it, though, as a percentage of the population, that death rate wasn't anywhere near as it would have been in the many, many Black Death plagues within the medieval periods. And really pretty much half of the population then, less people as well, I would say, but nearly half the population died of that stuff because there was no, they didn't understand it, it wasn't understood. Whereas we understand it now. We've got so much scientific advancement in medicine, for example. And that is part of how we're actually becoming what we are. We're becoming a species that are 9.5, nearly 10 billion people on this planet because we live longer, we're more healthier.
Who's to say that 9.5 billion is not sustainable, though? Because it's the way we distribute the wealth and the food and the resources. That's what's not sustainable. No, I don't think 9.5 billion is unsustainable. Just the way we live, it is.
And we talk about population as well as is also something that we feel that we can't actually control. Mm. But that's not necessarily true, is it? Because again, we understand with the advancement of science, we can control birth rate if we wanted to. But that's kind of an elephant in the room, I feel.
Well, I thought I was reading the other day that in Japan that there's a societal challenge there because there's a shortage of births.
Yes,
both genders.
I saw an intriguing map on Reddit the other day that showed every single country in Europe with the predominant generation. It was saying what was the predominant generation, and a vast majority of European countries are people over 50. That's the highest part of the population. It was only a couple of countries, I think Sweden, that was more infants, and I can't remember other ones. I think it might have been something like the Netherlands that was more Gen X, I think. So do you know what I mean? It was like it was quite fascinating that I would always thought that Europe maybe was younger, had a younger population. And as you say, Japan is really struggling because of the older population. It's just there's a lower birth rate going on there as well, isn't there?
There is. I think we've covered life's evolution will always have an influence on the Earth's atmosphere and Earth as a whole. But I just want to quickly, we've also discussed this, but I'll just quickly cover it. When will we all admit that the human existence will have positive and negative effects on the human planet? I don't think we all will all agree on anything. I don't think we need to. Again, it's the critical mass.
Do you think there'll ever be a point in the future, human future, that we actually would get to a point where we do actually agree, where we can actually almost be a planet species rather than culturally countries?
You'd hope, but I think it's...
culturally countries is a terrible phrase, but I think
we've got to evolve a huge amount before we get to that point.
Well, we're still very much in our early evolution as well.
Yeah. Will there ever be a time when we're not motivated to change just because it has personal benefit on us or our pockets? I remember leading a walk once and I asked this question in this clearing. I said, why doesn't man live sustainably? And one person said, we'll never live sustainably because we're only ever motivated by what's in our pockets. Which Elaine sort of hints at again. Will there ever be a time when we're not motivated to change just because personal benefit on us is in our pockets? I would hope to think there is a time where we're motivated by other things as well, but I can't ever see a point where we're not motivated by how much money we got in our pockets. That's always going to influence, you know, these shiny things that we say has value, but it actually means nothing really.
Yes, the concept of money is... I've always found the concept of money a bit bizarre.
Yeah.
Particularly when money is just literally digits. Yeah. Like, as in, like, digital.
Mm. I don't imagine a time where we're not motivated by that, but I'd like to imagine a time where we're motivated by other things as well,
Could we actually get rid of money?
Well, the modern day manifestation, we probably could, but the barter system is still money. There's still a financial system.
Yes.
There's still an exchange of goods and services. There's still value. Again, I don't know if we need to get rid of money. It's just the value system needs to modify.
Yes.
We're basically fucked, aren't we?
It didn't take too long to get to a swear word, did it, Stuart? And I'm going to rein myself in for this one.
Yeah.
I mean, there is this world, it's like science fiction world of Star Trek, which talks about how humans were united because of their small steps into space were noticed by a passing alien. I mean, this is very human-centric thinking anyway. And that first contact led to, you know, more harmonious because we saw our place in the universe. I would even I don't think that would actually work. Could you imagine if aliens came now what the world would actually, how the world would react to it. We are very protectionist, aren't we?
Yeah.
We don't want to be dominated. We never want to be dominated.
If we ever manage to get out into the space and colonise them, we're just going to make a mess of it like we have here.
Mm.
We haven't learnt the lessons.
How do we learn those lessons then? It's getting very deep for a January podcast episode.
Our own evolution, and we're not even there yet. It's like the human brain. You asked me once, how does acupuncture work?
Yes.
And I was thinking last night, an interpretation I had of it. I came up with it last night. I can't quite remember. I thought, Jesus, that's good. But I can't quite remember. But I think my conclusion was that when you take a painkiller, there are some painkillers that affect the nerve endings where the pain is. And then there are other painkillers that affect the receptors in the brain. So acupuncture sort of it's blocking those chains of communication. So you have these certain pressure points around the body that if you stick a needle in it, it's either going to confuse the brain because it's recognizing something at the nerve end, or it's got a direct lines to the brain. So you're reworking the pathways in the brain effectively. That's how acupuncture works to me. And going back to the human brain, I don't think we'll ever really understand how acupuncture and things like that work, because we don't understand the human brain. And the same with
we're beginning to understand it more.
We are, but we will never catch up with it. We will always be behind.
Well, one of my favourite things about neuroscience, I've said about neuroscience, I can't remember who said it, but they said the weirdest thing about neuroscience is that it's a brain thinking about the brain.
Mm. Yeah. It is disturbing. When you actually, so to actually know how we're going to evolve and I just think we're on a losing wicket. You know, our ability to question and understand and in theory be conscious.
It's going to be beyond our own lifetimes.
Yeah.
You know, way beyond our own lifetime. You know, we are all but mere drops in the ocean when it comes to evolution, even human evolution. Mm. You know, 50,000 years of history. You know, when we started really planting crops, becoming agricultural, it's kind of some people argue that was when we started really to become the humans that we are today.
Mm.
Started to really properly settle down into towns, especially. That evolutionary, that's a long time, 50,000 years for a human, of course. But on a grander time scale, it's again another drop in the ocean. So we're a drop in an ocean which is already a drop in the ocean itself.
But the human brain has been evolving for more than those 50,000 years. It was evolving for millions of years before that. You know, so we're millions of years behind our own brains. That's a nice transition to the next question. We're talking about planting there. Roman in Slovakia, he's placed our second question. He's talking about planting. Do you want to have a read of this one? I started to read it as you were talking.
Well, it's kind of like a bit of crossfade going on. 1990s is calling me. So thanks for your question, Elaine. I hope our discussion there led to some insights for yourself and whoever is listening to this podcast as well. Mm. But Roman, thank you very much. Would you say it's Roman or Roman?
Roman.
Roman, okay. Different stress, right? Mm. Roman from Slovakia, thanks for your question and great to have you back as well. Roman's question is tree planting the best thing for conservation? Natural succession gives you functioning communities of trees and shrubs genetically suited to their environment, plus all the species that go along with that. Firstly, planting trees bypasses the natural successional stages that so much of our biodiversity depends on. Secondly, many planted trees are not from local genetic stock and sometimes not even from the same country. Thirdly, most planted trees are not properly looked after and many die. Fourthly, and leading on from the above, planting trees cost a lot of money, and if most die, it's arguably a waste of money. Is it better to reduce the amount of trees we are cutting down and the drivers behind that cutting.
This is a move away from your normal subject, Roman, which is...
cars.
Cars and travel and transport. That's my take on it. Let's look at it from the top. Is tree planting the best thing for conservation? I like your thinking here. I don't think it necessarily is. It's how we do it, when we do it, why we do it.
It needs to be part of the bigger picture.
Yeah.
I think planting trees is a good idea.
Potentially. But it's not the conclusion of the matter.
No. Was it in Truro that we were in? That a particular tree was planted in a particular location?
Oh, yeah, Truro, yeah.
And it was a horse chestnut tree.
Yeah.
And it was like, that probably isn't the best place for a horse chestnut tree. Because it's going to get huge and take over the entire area.
But people thought it was a tree. Great, fantastic.
Yes.
But think about the ecosystem. What Roman's talking about here, the natural succession gives a functioning communities of trees and shrubs genetically suited to their environment, plus all the species that go along with that. Now, what I think, Roman, you're hinting at is when you get a natural piece of woodland, a piece of land starts off as grassland, then you get colonised by scrubland, which is small trees and shrubs, and then you'll get taller trees coming in, and it will turn into heathland, and then it will turn into woodland, and then it will turn into climax woodland after about 3 or 4 years, because certain trees like ashes and oaks, that they will come up and dominate and kill off everything underneath. And then when they die, it all goes back to the beginning. So that successional biodiversity is lost, because if we're planting, we're actually trying to give woodlands a helping hand in planting the trees that would come about 30, 40 years later, maybe 100 years later. There's a layer of biodiversity in life that's missing.
Yes.
So, yeah, it does need thinking about. Natural succession is an important thing. There's a book I'm on the shelf called The Hidden Life of Trees, and that talks about if you get a... I talk about this in the corporate workshops we do out in nature. If you... I'm not suggesting you do this, but if you get an ancient forest and you cut it down and you dig the roots up, all those trees are connected. So the stronger trees make themselves slightly weaker by feeding the weaker trees, which makes them slightly stronger. So as a whole, it's one big organism, because the roots are all entwined. And I say that with corporate workshops, saying, well, you know, when you're working as a team, it's not about the strongest being up there and the weakest being down here. The stronger needs to make themselves weaker to make the weaker stronger. And as a group, you're stronger.
And in any way, many different ways as well.
Yeah.
So it's not just a matter of one person strong, one person's weak. Mm. It's the fact that one person's strong in a particular place and somebody's strong in another place, and their weaknesses and strengths might actually mirror each other.
No, but when you plant a woodland and say you cut it down 200 years later, those roots have not connected up. So a self-sown woodland that's naturally colonised is a much more healthy ecosystem, because the roots are all connected.
I was also going to say that succession of communities turning from trees to shrubs to forests doesn't always happen.
No.
Everywhere.
No.
But what that means is it's important
that it's allowed to, if it wants to, if it can.
Exactly. But what it would do would mean that you would actually end up with parts that are not wooded and other parts that are wooded, and then you have these great bits between. So life often is on the edges of these places, isn't it? So when you have, like, we talked about in the Wildlife and Everyday Gardens talk, I seem to recall that, having long grass next to short grass, the life is between those two bits.
Yeah.
Life, you know, the prey are popping out to eat something and then going back in again.
Yeah.
You get the same with hedgerows. You get the same with woodland. Mm. When you really want to see, if you really want to see some birds, go to the edge of the woodland and you hear them. That's where they actually... That's where they mark their territory.
Mm.
So actually, it's not just a matter of the goal of having really good woodland. It's also just having a greater diversity of environments.
Mm. Yep. Goes on another passage in this statement. Firstly, planting trees bypasses the natural successional stages that so much of our biodiversity depends on. Yes, exactly. When you're planting, you're playing God, and you're saying, okay, we're gonna give it a helping hand at this point. But who's to say that's the best helping hand? You know, it has an impact. Like in Elaine's question, life has an impact, and us planting trees has a positive and negative impact. And by denying that, denies the learning.
I would say that the it's two things about this whole thing. We'll go through the rest of the points here. Roman's made some really good points here. But this one thing is, it's very human thinking, and it's very human time frame thinking as well. Yeah. We think about. I was just thinking, actually, the name that just popped into my head, actually, is Capability Brown. Mm. He never saw his gardens to what they became. He just imagined, he planned them out in his head, didn't he?
Yeah.
But he never saw them as the mature gardens they became. No. We seem to think that planting trees now will help, because we see the results. Also, we see the results, don't we? Mm. If those trees flourish, oh, look at these trees; they're fantastic. There's quite an amazing glade of trees down. It was planted in the millennium down near Grove, just north of Wantage in South Oxfordshire.
Yeah,
and it's these beautiful, beautiful trees, and it's just all. It is very monoculture, but it feels like you're in a cathedral. They're very tall, very high canopy, very long, tall trees, but. It shows this impact. It shows you, oh, wow, look at this, is really natural. But it's actually really, it's not got much biodiversity because it hasn't been able to evolve. But we feel that we've made an impact, even though it's that short-term impact, isn't it?
I remember 20-odd years ago, I used to do some conservation work up Shotover Country Park just outside of Oxford. And when we used to, I remember there was, we were clearing some birch trees.
Hmm.
And this bloke walked past, wasn't interested in talking. He would just say, what are you destroying now? But actually, by cutting down those birch trees, there's a lot of them up there. So we just cleared a section. Didn't clear them all, just cleared a section. And before we started cutting them, there was about 20 different species of plants growing under them. And then when we cleared them, within 3 years, there was nearly 500 different species of plants growing. So it's that diversity. It's sort of like we need to have these conversations and not be too protectionist.
So next, Roman's next point. Secondly, many planted trees are not from local genetic stock and sometimes not even from the same country. It's not something that I've actually considered where the trees are coming from.
Mm. A lot of trees are imported.
It makes total sense because it's obviously about cost, isn't it, right?
It's a cost. It's the effectiveness.
Supply as well.
Supply. I mean, disease gets transferred around. It's like Dutch elm disease in the UK. That really killed off most of our elm trees in the 70s and 80s. But that's because genetically, most of our elm trees in this country are the same tree because they are cuttings, root cuttings. From the same, you know, and that's how they propagated most effectively, because they send up suckers. So they're genetically too narrow. But actually, those trees are all still alive. The roots are all still down there. Well, mostly they're still down there because you get the regrowth and they live for about 4 years. And then they get the elm disease again, and then it kills them, kills those growths back. But the roots are still down there, and then the next generation of suckers will come up. And the reason it going to live for about 4 years is because the beetle that spreads the virus, this bacteria, fungus, whatever it is flying at that height. So when it gets to about 4 years old, an elm tree, it flies, the beetles find it, and then it spreads the disease. But those roots are all still down there. And they reckon it will take one generation of elm trees to become immune to Dutch elm disease. Unfortunately, a generation of elm trees is 400 years. So we got another 360 odd years to go before we see our elm trees come back. But the point there is, genetically, we're very efficient at propagating plants, but the genetic makeup is maybe too narrow, so they're not immune. It's like roses. People want to grow roses that are don't suffer with black spot and things, and various funguses, and they don't suffer with green fly. Most insects find their host plant by smell. So the roses aren't as fragrant as they used to be, as they were years ago in our grandparents' days, because the insects would find the roses through smell. The smell has been bred out of them, so they don't smell anymore, but they're more effective at fighting off disease. But genetically, they're much narrower.
Mm.
Only saying.
Do you want to do the third point?
Third point. Thirdly, Roman says, most planted trees are not properly looked after and many die. There is a lot of cynicism when you get all these developments going up and, oh, well, we're going to put these trees in. It's not, if you look next to the Water Eaton Park and Ride in Kidlington, loads of trees are planted around there, and most by the entrance, and most of them just haven't survived. Mm. But nobody's noticing. And if you raise that, oh, we'll put some trees in somewhere else. We have to look after these darn things.
And why do we just have to plant trees?
Yeah.
I mean, just have a little bit more diversity.
Mm.
And there's actually really... green space is really good for us anyway. Mm. And it doesn't have to just be... I mean, trees are fantastic. And we're going to go through the fourth point here as well. I want to come back to a more positive thinking about trees, because trees aren't bad things, are they?
No.
But fourthly, and this is Roman's point, of course, fourthly, and leading on from the above, planting trees costs a lot of money. And if many, most die, it's arguably a waste of money. Yeah, it is, isn't it?
Mm. Yeah. So we're just short-term thinking and turning a blind eye. And then somebody else will come along. Oh, well, let's plant some more trees. That didn't work. Let's plant some more trees.
Yeah, so...
We're not learning.
And Roman concludes, is it better to reduce the amount of trees we are cutting down and the drivers behind that cutting? I mean,
That's another angle, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, cutting down a tree that is evidently going to potentially cause issues, fall apart, drop branches on people, that type of thing. We have our own... We do need to protect ourselves in some ways, but trees sometimes will be cut down because they're just in the way.
Yeah, but then the plane roundabout just before Christmas in Oxford.
That's exactly the tree I was talking about.
Yeah, and they took a tree down there. And, you know, is that just health and safety gone mad?
Maybe.
I do know the tree officer for Oxford City Council. You know, his heart's in the right place. But, you know, when you get caught up in bureaucracy and procedure and health and safety and job protectionism, you know, are you doing the right thing? Only yeah. saying.
But I want to finish this this episode off just because we've gone through all in a way, and there's some really good points here from Roman, and we in so many ways agree with him, I would say, Stuart.
Yeah.
What are the positives about growing trees? Sometimes it's hard to. Sometimes it's harder to come up with positives than it is to come with negatives.
Talking about a negative, I was talking to a woman the other day, and she was saying, "There's only one of two people I've ever met that didn't felt uncomfortable out in nature." And she said, "Yeah, I do like trees, but she said I saw that tree yesterday. It's not doing anything different today than it was yesterday. Why do I need to see it a second time?" I think trees get we're obsessed with them because they give us a sense of permanence and also give us a sense of impermanence when you see parts of the woods and jungles and that cleared. You think actually the sycamore gap.
Yes, that's an interesting story, because for me it says. A lot of people got very upset about that tree being cut down.
It's in Yorkshire, isn't it? There's a...
Hadrian's Wall, I
yeah,
think it's
oh, yeah, Hadrian's Wall, yeah. There was a sycamore last year. It'd been growing for 200-300 years in this valley by Hadrian's Wall on the boundary between England and Scotland.
Or the ancient boundary, at least.
The ancient boundary, not the current one. And the current one's marked out by empty whiskey bottles. Anyway, I shouldn't say that. Anyway, I'd probably left them there. Anyway, so somebody cut it down, and but I think that root would regrow, you know, if it was left.
But it's an interesting example of people getting upset. A person getting upset about a particular tree being cut down, yet. so many trees are cut down anyway. It was almost like it was a national treasure. One tree wasn't this national treasure.
I think it comes down to permanence again.
Yes. I do want to come back to that positivity thing, but I will just make one point about that Sycamore Gap tree. There was a 1992 film, I think it was, Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves.
Yeah, that's right. Used that tree.
They used that tree. And once I found out where it actually was, I was thinking, why are they even going there? Because they're supposed to be going to Nottingham. And they were supposed to come. So there's one scene where they land quite clearly by the Seven Sisters, which is Beachy Head on the south coast near Eastbourne. And they're supposed to be going to Nottingham. And one of the next scenes is they're at Hadrian's Wall. I was like, they've gone too far north. they've missed Nottingham. they have to double back.
It's a little bit like watching Inspector Morse as he goes through Oxford. He can't turn
that way. He can't park there.
Yeah, exactly.
That road doesn't lead into that road.
No. Yeah. Positive. I think it gives us a sense of permanence. It gives us a sense of where we stand in the world, but also we're unhealthily glued to that sense of permanence. So
it doesn't also give shade as well.
It gives shade, but I just think now we need to think of the
brings movement to a space.
It does, but I'm
trying to push this positive agenda.
I think we need to. Well, I think positive agenda. I would say let's just broaden the understanding of away from trees, yes. Include them, but trees that have an important role to play, but they're not the answer on their own. That's the most positive thing I can say about trees.
Yeah,
if you don't have them, you're fucked.
When you plant,
but if you have too many of them, you're fucked.
If you plant something, you know, plant a tree, but then plant something else as well.
Yeah.
But I think there also needs to be. I mean, you think about how like places are managed now, like nature reserves are managed, that people are trying to get that to be a particular type of environment again, trying to encourage it into a particular type of environment. And trees would be part of that puzzle.
Potentially.
Right? Potentially part of that puzzle, depending on what you're actually trying to create.
We had Warnford Meadows along here, and I said the conversation once when they wanted to set up a management plan. I said, what do you want to preserve? How it used to be, how it is, or how you want it to look in the future? And they still haven't answered that question now. They're still fighting about what should be done.
I think the biggest win for that was the fact it was never built on.
No, exactly. And it was right next to a mental health facility, which you thought they understood the benefit of being green.
Also, there's an elderly care home as well.
Yeah, but they're talking about moving that. They're going to be... they're going to be moving the Warnford Hospital somewhere else. And that's going to be a different part, science research study centre for Oxford University. Interesting.
Yes.
Anyway, so that's another episode of the People's Countryside Environmental Debate Podcast with him.
William Mankler, thanks very much for being with us, and thanks for tuning in. You always tell me off for saying tuning in.
Yeah.
It's not a radio, is it? Thanks for listening into this podcast. We really appreciate everybody who listens to this podcast. Yeah.
And I'm Ben Stewart, the Wild Man, Mabbott, the other co-host. We'll be back soon. The next two questions are coming from Iris in Wetley Rocks and Fanaka in Kenya.